Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. The right to have a lawyer represent a defendant in court is enshrined in the Sixth Amendment to the United States Constitution. But that's in all criminal prosecutions, not civil. There is no right to counsel in civil court. And my next guest is trying to draw attention to this and how it can ruin the lives of people who can't afford to hire a lawyer in those cases. Here with me now is Martha Bergmark, Executive Director of Voices for Civil Justice, an organization that seeks to raise awareness of civil legal aid. And she wrote an op-ed on this topic with Thomas Perez, the U.S. Labor Secretary, for CNN that was published yesterday. Hi, Martha. Welcome to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. I'm glad to be with you.
And you wrote that in civil cases, regular people are representing themselves in more than 70% of cases. Wow. Is this primarily because they can't afford a lawyer or because they don't realize how much a lawyer would help?
It's some of both, but primarily it's because they can't afford to pay for a lawyer.
What kinds of cases are we talking about here? Because people's first reaction to hearing this might be, well, there's no constitutional right to get a lawyer to help you sue somebody.
That's right. But as we mentioned in the piece, Nicole, who is a 26-year-old single mom in Chicago, represented herself in an eviction case there, and she thought she was agreeing to pay rent in order to stay in her home. But it turned out that she actually was agreeing to an order to vacate, give her landlord possession of the only decent housing that she could afford. So the consequences could have been really crushing. She could have lost everything. And fortunately, she was able to make her way to a civil legal aid program, Legal Assistance Foundation in Chicago. They appealed and won, and she and her two children were able to stay in her home. But she was the lucky one. Fewer than one in five Americans who need that kind of help are likely to get it.
And again, outside of the conventional view that people may have of a lawsuit, we're talking about evictions, as in the case you just stated, foreclosures, child custody hearings, even domestic violence, which often takes place outside of the criminal context, right?
That's right. So people really have no idea that you can lose your children, you can lose your home, your livelihood, without having access to legal help to get you through complicated proceedings.
And a recent article in Slate by an attorney at the Institute for Policy Integrity at NYU points out that accused domestic abusers are guaranteed a lawyer if they're the accused abusers, but the person doing the accusing doesn't always have access to any kind of legal services. So that's one of the core situations that you're trying to fix?
That's right. And in that same study, the finding was that it was having access to legal assistance that was probably the most significant factor in a person getting into a safe environment, escaping a domestic violence situation at home.
Are there ways a lawyer could help a domestic violence victim beyond just in court?
Well, the services to domestic violence victims need to be wraparound services. But as that study found, one of the very key ones is access to legal help that can help you not just in the protective order that may be necessary, but also with custody, with child support. There's a range of legal consequences that come about in that situation, and legal help is absolutely paramount to a person being able to get back in a safe situation and get back in an economic foothold to move forward.
Listeners, have you ever gone to civil court and had to represent yourself because you couldn't afford a lawyer? 212-433-WNYC. Tell us your story. How did it go? Do you have a question about how to go about hiring a lawyer for a case that's coming up and you're not sure how you'll be able to afford it, where to get financial assistance where it does exist for that kind of thing, And what about the policy argument that my guest will certainly make? Martha Bergmark, Executive Director of Voices for Civil Justice. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And let me take another of your common examples, foreclosure proceedings. How expensive is it typically for a person to hire a lawyer to defend against foreclosure?
You know, I'm... How expensive is it depends on how many hours need to go into it. But it can cost hundreds and thousands of dollars. $150 an hour is probably an average attorney fee in that situation. But what we're looking at here is a need to invest more in civil legal aid, which is a program that provides a combination of services and resources depending on what your needs are. So if we invested more in this program, we would be able not simply to provide a lawyer in every situation or full-scale legal representation, but sometimes it's information that you need, sometimes it's access to a court-based self-help center or some other circumstance that doesn't necessarily involve soup to nuts legal representation. So I would just want to say that civil legal aid is so important because it does offer that range of services, and it's an investment that has long-term benefits. It stabilizes families in crisis. It saves taxpayers money in the long run, but we're simply not doing nearly enough to support it.
One of those sobering statistics that you give in your op-ed in eviction cases, I just want to highlight this. When a person facing eviction, has a lawyer, two-thirds of the time they're able to stay in their home. And when a person facing eviction doesn't have a lawyer, they lose their home in two-thirds of cases, as you point out. So this civil legal aid that you're advocating, is this a matter of Congress acting to fund such a thing, create such a category, or just expand such a category? Or is it this at the level of state and local government? Who needs to do what to start to reach this reality?
Civil legal aid is available, theoretically at least, in every community in America because there is federal funding to support it. But the federal funding is minuscule in comparison to what's needed. And so it's really complemented in many, many places by state and local funding, by individual contributions, by contributions from the legal community in the way of pro bono or volunteer services. It's supported by court systems. In New York, Chief Judge Jonathan Lippmann, the chief judge of your Court of Appeals, has been an absolute leader on this nationwide, really sounding the alarm for this system that is in crisis, and has urged New York to step up in a way that's really been quite magnificent. The state appropriations have grown very significantly, and your legislature just last month passed a joint resolution urging that in critical, essential cases that legal counsel be provided. So funding is not fully there yet, but New York has certainly been a leader on this, and really shows what can happen when state leadership steps up as New York's has.
Richard in Manhattan has a story, I think. Hi, Richard. You're on WNYC. Richard, you there? Oh, Richard. Okay, we'll try to get back to Richard. You and the Secretary of Labor argue in your op-ed that this issue is tied to inequality and economic mobility. It seems obvious to me why this would be the case. And it seems to tie into this great unveiling of, lifting the curtain on so many of these economic inequality issues and how they intersect with the criminal justice system. So, for example, we've been having a big conversation about bail in New York recently, and how so many people wind up in jail and how that hampers them over the long term for very small things, nonviolent crimes for which the judge intends them to get out on bail, but they don't have the bail money. And so this is, seems like a related issue.
It is a related issue, and we find this is one that crosses over into civil legal aid as well. We find that when people, for example, come out of prison or out of being caught up in the criminal justice system, there are lots of civil consequences to that. The ability to get a job, the ability to get housing, all of these are implicated by that mistake that one may have made in one's past, but that one is served one's time for and made recompense, and yet we impose those consequences. It's civil legal aid programs that are helping people navigate that course of the, in their lives to get back to where they can get jobs and get housing. Often that's with expungement, what's called expungement proceedings to help people set aside those consequences in a legal way, and that's available in some states. And sometimes it's other kinds of help to, for example, get child support payments in line with what a person can afford at that point so that they're not confronting the possibility of going back to jail because of inability to pay those obligations.
My guest is Martha Bergmark, Executive Director of Voices for Civil Justice, an organization that seeks to raise awareness of civil legal aid for civil court, and Ray and Fairlawn. You're on WNYC. Hi, Ray.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I'm calling because I worked 12 years with New Jersey DIFAS, Division of Youth and Family Services, Protective Services to Abused and Neglected Children. And during that time, I witnessed or observed any number of incidents where those very few and far between families that could afford a private attorney were able to bring a case heard before a judge where their children were not forced to be removed from the home. And that was the initial intent of DIFAS, to take the children out because they felt the children were under threat. Now, were they or weren't they? The fact of the matter is if you had an attorney, you had a much better situation to have the judge hear your case and work out an alternate and reasonable plan. If you did not have an attorney, the judge would pretty much, this is a, if you didn't have a private attorney, you were assigned a public attorney who was overworked, responsible for all the protective service cases in the county, and really couldn't represent to the judge a real defense of DIFAS actions or of his client's actions. And more than likely, I would say 99% of the time, DIFAS got whatever it put in as long in front of a judge,
right,
before.
So it affected whether parents would lose their children, basically.
Correct.
Ray, I'm going to leave it there and move on to another caller, but a very important example. City Council Member Mark Levine from the west side of Manhattan is calling in, I think, on a related bill that he has to what we're talking about. Councilman Levine, hi.
Hey, Brian, how you doing?
Okay.
Great. Yes, we have introduced Intro 214 to the City Council, which would provide a right to counsel in housing court in New York City for all low-income tenants. This is such a crisis for the city. We have over 150,000 cases a year in housing court, and only 10% of tenants have attorneys. Of course, on the other side, 90% or more of landlords have attorneys, and that creates, not surprisingly, terrible results for tenants. We had 25,000 evictions last year and many thousands of cases where the tenant leaves during the proceedings under duress. And this is feeding the homeless crisis in New York City. The number one source, number one cause of family homelessness in New York City, of family homelessness, is evictions. And, of course, families are two-thirds of the homeless population in our shelters. So we've just got to tackle this problem. And we have a bill to do just that. It's got something like 35 co-sponsors. Want to make New York City the first jurisdiction in America to offer a right to counsel for tenants in housing court.
What will it cost?
Well, there's a big upfront cost, probably about $100 million, but as Martha said, the city ultimately saves money because homelessness costs the city so much. We spend close to $1 billion on homeless shelters, and eviction also impacts the cost of educating children who may need busing to school. It increases health care costs. People are more likely to wind up in emergency rooms if they're homeless. So all the data shows, and Judge Lippman's been one of the leaders in making this point, is that government saves money by spending a little bit up front on providing an attorney in housing court. It's only $2,000 or $3,000 on average up front. And in homeless shelters, we spend over $30,000 a year for families. So you can do the math. You can see that it's a great upfront investment that not only has a huge human benefit, but would save money for the city long term.
New York City Councilmember Mark Levine, thank you for calling in. And
yes, Councilman Levine, we're proud of you for doing that and bringing attention to that. And your New York Task Force study that again, Chief Judge Lippman called for, found that every dollar invested in civil legal aid delivers $6 in returns to the state's economy, largely through government savings. So I think your point is very well taken, that this is an investment that is well worth making, both for all taxpayers as well as, of course, for the benefit of those folks who are otherwise suffering crushing losses, not because they did something wrong, but simply because they don't have legal help.
Mark in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Mark.
Hi there. Thank you for having me. So I, like I guess others, have been in prolonged Supreme Court, originally in a divorce that I had representation until I ran out of money. My suspicion is that the lawyer probably knew exactly how much money I had and calculated how much he would work for me until I ran out of money, and then no more attorney. I've now been in a contempt proceeding for failure to pay the amount that I owe, and I have representation because I face incarceration.
Oh, boy.
Alongside of that, I have a custodial case through a motion that I filed pro se in front of the judge. And so I go to court represented by an attorney for my contempt proceeding, and then he steps aside, and I am pro se on the custodial issues, but yet it's all part of the same case. And while he's helpful to me, he understands that I'm really on my own. And it's amazing how, as when I'm on my own in the case, I'm completely lost. I mean, I feel like, you know, I might as well be, you know, somewhere in space. And the help of the lawyer is so critical. So it's really a horrible situation.
It sounds horrible. And to be clinical about it, you're a walking natural experiment in the difference between having a lawyer and not having a lawyer, unfortunately for you.
That's right. And what's so sad is that the most important issue is always the kids. And that issue, I'm completely on my own. The issue around, is it $2 or $5? There I have a lawyer.
Mark, thank you very much. Pretty interesting, Martha, huh?
Indeed. It's unfortunately, one could just go on and on with examples of the kinds of consequences, like Mark mentions, that happen when there's not legal help.
So before you go, you're advocating at the policy level and the funding level. In the meantime, any advice for any person out there who really can't afford a lawyer but needs one to go about finding one, and walk us through any process that you may know of, or mention a contact or two?
Yes. Each state is, every county in America, in fact, is serviced by a civil legal aid program. And the map for that with contact information is at LSC, standing for Legal Services Corporation, .gov. So that's a place to start in your home community.
And we leave it there with Martha Bergmark, Executive Director of Voices for Civil Justice, an organization that seeks to raise awareness of civil legal aid. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, from undocumented Dominican immigrant in a New York City homeless shelter to a Stanford PhD in the classics, Daned Padilla-Peralta will tell his story.